Welcome to episode 546 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I'm having an amazing Monday morning.
Hey.
A spectacular one, you may say.
I think I know where this is heading. I think I know where this is heading.
Yeah.
With my smooth, non-superhero brain can get where we're going with this one. Might be some Spider-Man on today's podcast, but we got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going?
Pretty good as well, but I mean, maybe not spectacular or maybe not amazing because, you know, Richard beat me to it. But, I'm having a pretty good day so far, especially after this weekend.
So, if you didn't pick it up from the hints that Richard and Krim have been dropping, one of the big topics this week, we got super early Spider-Man spoilers. So, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Spider-Man set. But, of course, it's also pre-release/early access weekend for Edge of Eternity, so we got to talk about that. There's some Hasbro earning results, an interesting new, innovative, but I'm not sure if it's a positive style of secret lair drop that we want to get into. So, those are our topics for today. We're going to be bouncing around from earnings to Edge of Eternities to secret lairs to Spider-Man. Man. Before we get to that, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic. And let's start with, I guess, what is old news, which is Edge of Eternity's pre-release happened this week. We had early access day. We got to try out new Magic cards. I'm curious what your guys' impressions were. I know we got to do some limited and some constructed. What were your thoughts from pre-release weekend and early access day? How are you feeling about Edge of Eternities?
Yo, dude, this is how many back-to-back sold out pre-releases? Like mine was, this would be the third one since Tarkir. So Tarkir, Final Fantasy, and this, they've all been packed and like waitlisted and all of that. So with me being on the waitlist this time, because I didn't think it would sell out as hard.
How many people, like, what is a sellout at your LGS? Like, what is, like, 20 people, 80 people? I don't know how big. It's relatively big then. Yeah. That's actually very impressive.
It's 80 not counting the waitlist, right?
Wow.
So, but yeah, like overall, it was like the energy was super high. Everyone was there just jamming and like just hanging out. And I think after playing the games, yo, these mechanics for the set are kind of complicated. Like they add a lot of like depth to the gameplay this time around. Just like, you know, sitting down and just like playing your creature and then just being able to like space or station stuff immediately was really big. And like it comes down to when you station, because that could lead to you getting smacked for a lot. I think I probably won a game because an opponent stationed a little too much. You know what I mean? And like it's like, okay, well, I have combat tricks or I have removal, right? Also, removal is aplenty. And I think the counters archetype was absurdly nuts. So yeah, like just 1/1 counters.
What do you think of limited, Richard? I know you got a little bit of limited in, right?
Yeah, I played early access. I think I got like 5 events in before I got whisked away to look at Spider-Man, because you know, Spider-Man was happening during early access. Okay, whatever. And then I went to pre-release, get a beat on some noobs, because apparently I played the format for a full day before anyone has read the cards. So unlike Krim, it was back to normal pre-release at my LGS. So it sold out like exacties. Like it sold out like at the start time. So like the last person kind of queued in. It was just a normal pre-release as opposed to Final Fantasy, where everyone was just going nuts. I've concluded that, one, modern pre-release times need to be updated. So if we go back 10 years, right? You finish your deck in like 15 minutes, dirtle around for 30 minutes in deck building, right? Maybe get a couple matches, like literal matches in before the round starts. nowadays I finish like 2 minutes. 2 minutes before. This is, mind you, after a full day of early access. Yeah. So I know what all the cards do, but it still takes forever to read all the cards, build the things. I don't know how anyone finishes their deck in time. And then we play the matches, and I've concluded no one can play Magic anymore. It is so complicated. People left things on warp forever. You know, like they played it as the warp cost, and they just forgot about it. Yeah, they forgot it altogether. Void, no one understands. Like, it triggers on your opponent's stuff going away. People forget that. They think your stuff has to die. They also forget that warping turns it on, right? And then spacecraft, incredibly, incredibly complicated. Like Krim said, it's another, like, fundamental thing that you need to understand now. It feels bad to play summoning sick creature without using it to crew, right? So your sequencing is all different now. People overly crew and like get smacked in the face. I will say that every spacecraft is crewable. Like you look at like some like dirtly card that's like 8+, like no problem. It's coming online. Like you need to take spacecraft highly. They're very impactful. Things you think, you know, you're like, oh, I'm throwing away 10 powers. Like, no, actually, you just like warped in the +1/+1 counter guy. He gave you like 8 crew for free this turn. Like, it's coming on, right? So, interesting format. I don't know. I'm kind of over it.
I made it a week.
I was thinking about it, right? I'm like, remember like Maro? Like, there was like a question a long time ago, like, why aren't there more like humanoid type new species? And then the answer was something like, well, they're not pleasant to look at. And that's what I was thinking about the whole time. I'm like, this grasshopper guy is just not doing it for me, you know?
Like, what?
Like, I'm like, you don't like biotech, it's like kind of like, I don't know how to explain it, right? It's like, it's not exactly like gross, like, but it's like, it's like humanoid enough that it gets in that uncanny valley thing. And I'm like, I don't want to be looking at this grasshopper dude like all game, right? And I'm like, I don't know, right? And then I'm like, what's with these jellyfish things? And why are they not artificers? And like, I need to worry about Kamus? Like, what's a Kamu? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, just give me some Spider-Man. So I don't know. I didn't really like the space aesthetic, even though like in a vacuum, I like space. I like Star Wars, I like all that. But I truly felt we were universes beyond here, right? Like, something was off. It didn't feel fantasy to me, the spaceship and all that stuff. But mechanically, I think it's interesting. And it's probably going to be one of the most skill-intensive formats ever, right? Because now you got to worry about blocking, attacking, and crewing, and there are random board wipes just to get you in this format, and removal
to plenty. Uncommon that just exiles artifacts 3 or less. Yeah, I was not ready for
all the top tables. It was all board wipe decks. The singularity thing, the 8 cost that wipes, the toxic deluge. It's like, it's so hard to play around, right? Because you need to keep spamming the board, but then you need to not get destroyed by the board wipe. So all the top tables were board wipe decks. So it was kind of crazy, but yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, it is a very complex set, but I kind of like that. I don't know. I kind of like the complexity and all these little synergies that are kind of like built into it. We'll see. Maybe it's too much. Like, maybe it's just over the top. I do think there is a concern of just like how wordy it gets. Like, at some point, people turn their brains off and don't even bother to play. And maybe, do you think that's, we've talked about Magic getting more casual, right? And how Commander has gotten so big. Do you think that's part of it, is that as Magic gets more complicated, it's easier just to play Commander because you're playing casually? If you mess up some stuff, no one really cares, you know? Like, you don't have to know how everything works because you can have a good time and, like, play. I don't know. I've been thinking about this because I was teaching my, like, little nephew how to play, again, reteaching him, and he, like, played a bounce land, and it came into play tapped, and he thought it was just a dual land. I was like, maybe that's next. Maybe I'll teach him that next time. We'll ignore that. We're working on some more important
stuff.
We'll get to the bounce lands next time. But like, little things like that in Commander just are not as big of a deal. So do you think that's part of it? Is Magic just getting too complex at this point for people to actually gronk?
I mean, I think that like it depends. Yeah, yes, it is like when it comes to like a sanctioned setting. Right. Like, OK, if you more normally play tabletop or just Commander with friends. Right. And then you go to like a sanctioned event. it'll feel more complicated because the plays will matter there. But in reality, if it's at a pre-release, I just told all my opponents, like, hey, you probably don't want to do that. Right?
Yeah.
Because I could kill you right now, and you could see that here. So, I do think that it casual has made everybody way more relaxed, right? So, which is a good thing. It has its ups and downs, right? The good news is that most people just go into the event, and they're like, whatever. Don't really care. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm here to have fun.
So there is an upside to it.
I think it makes it less fun. Like, I enjoyed it more when everyone went to the LGS and was sweaty about it, right? Like, you can expect to play reasonable Magic, but now it's like, just kind of stomp all over you because, like, you don't know how to block, right? And, like, it's not as fun when that happens, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of want to play people your own skill level or at least, like, reasonably close. Like, Heart of the Cards doesn't work when you're kind of, like, missing kind of the fundamentals of Magic, right? So I don't know. I like it to be more competitive. And, like, it doesn't mean we have to be, like, super sweaty, but at least everyone had the same intent versus, like, you know, I don't know. I'm just here to pick up cards from my commander deck, and then I'm here, right? So, and I don't know. That's probably just, like, a content creator problem, you know, like, after playing so many games on Arena, like, what do you expect, right? Like, do you expect everyone else to play as many games on Arena? Like, probably not.
Right.
But it'd be more fun if it was just not, like, a stomp your way to the last table where, like, the one other person is there who's actually, like, read the cards before. But I don't know how to fix that, though. Like, making the cards less complex probably fixes that, right? Because, like, people won't stumble just randomly for no reason. You know what I mean? And that closes the gap. But, the card complexity, I think. Also, people can't, like, I think people don't read the cards. Like, seriously? Like after the game, we look at some people's pools. And then you're like, there's, like, four red rares that are, like, absolute bombs. You should totally be in red. It's like, I just saw this black card. It looked cool, so I just went black. And I'm like, right? This person, it's like, you know, there's like a 4-mana 4/4 lifelinker in black. It's a rare, okay? And then it also has an Edict effect. When you hit someone, you draw a card, lose a life. It has some void effect, too. I don't even know what it is. But, like, 4-mana 4/4 lifelink, you should just stop right there and slam it in your deck, right?
Good
but,
enough,
like,
yeah.
People... there's, like, too much text. There's too much going on. People don't have time to, like, parse it all. So, like, I don't know. Like, what if we just play with 2-mana 2/2 bears, you know? Like, here it is. 2-mana 2/2. It can swing. It can block. It can croon. That's it. Like,
I wonder,
basics.
Did either of you do Foundations pre-release? I'm curious if that was any different. Because, like, Foundations is supposed to be, like, the new player set. Do you think that, like, was that the proper level for people to, like, actually grasp it? Do you think it's different than a set like Edge of Eternities from what you remember?
Foundations, I feel like, was too boring, though.
It was, well,
right,
I
mean, like,
but that's probably what it would be if you made it for the people
that's
who
what
don't
happens,
know how to block,
right?
Right? Like, that's, yeah, it's going to be too
Dude,
boring
I,
for
I
us.
Dude, I technically
but...
didn't know how to block either because I fell asleep, right? Like, I was just like, oh, my God.
We got Gatortooth Commander players, not the Crimson Richards. Right? Like, we'll,
yeah.
You know, like, it takes a lot for us to see something new.
It's a good thing, though, right? If there are new players who are just, like, there, like, casually, just like, oh, this just looks cool, so I want to play it. And, I saw a lot of people that are out there just at their first pre-release, and they're just like, oh, this looks sick because it's space, right? And, like, you know, that alone, like, that's more interesting to people. That's going to draw people in as opposed to, like, here's Foundations, right? Like, where everything's kind of just vanilla. Like, it's a good, it's... I guess that's good for the soul of all the Magic boomers that exist, right? But, like, it's not actually, like, entertaining or interesting enough. So if the sets are complicated but, like, look cool and whatnot and has, you know, random Timmy coming out of like, you know, the tabletop, like vibes to come play at a pre-release, I think that's probably better, even if the set is complicated. Plus, I think there's something about it being complicated that adds appeal to, like, the set. Like, it is early, like, early release, right, pre-release, so I expect a lot of people to be like, oh, this, yo, I love all the jellyfish, which I do, because they look sick, like, all the jellyfish look cool to them, so they just want to build a jellyfish deck, even though they have the best four red rares in the game.
I will say, from a constructed perspective, I haven't played any limited yet, but I played a bunch of early access, and I think this set's going to be impactful, but I think it's going to take while for the decks to, like, the best decks to emerge, just because it's not just straightforward linear, like, aggro stuff or, like, even control stuff. It's got all these weird synergies. So I think, like, there's going to be some really interesting and powerful decks that come out of this set. But I think it's going to take a few weeks of people, like, brewing and tuning for those decks actually to get to the point where they want to be. Between, like, stationing and warping, it's just all these really unique, like, counterintuitive and somewhat synergistic mechanics. So I'm really excited. I felt like this was one of the early access days where I felt like I was just, like, barely scratching the surface of what I could do with the cards, even though I played for, like, 12 hours that day or something. So I'm just really excited for the set to, like, drop, because there's so much more brewing to do with this set.
Did spacecraft work in standard? Like, can you crew them and turn them online, or do you just instantly fall over?
My experience was, it's easier to do than you probably think, but it's also matchup dependent, where, like, if you run into an aggro deck, there is a really big cost to actually tapping down your stuff to try to crew it up. So I think they're better than most people give them credit for in standard. Whether or not that's enough that they're going to be actual, like, staples, that still is to be determined. But if you want to do it, it actually isn't that hard to crew them. But if you run into mono red or something, you're going to be in trouble. Plus, I got to beat Krim this time on early access. I feel like usually I run into you when you're playing some control deck and I just get miserable and then you end up beating me, but this time I actually got you, Krim. I got you with the artifact combo deck.
It was a pretty cool deck, dude. Like, Seth got me. I was trying to just play with the Lobster Man, and Seth was like, no, I'm gonna combo off.
Yeah,
I'm
like, okay. Make a bunch of treasures. Go ahead.
Did you try seeing, like, or playing with, like, Lumen Class Frigate, which is a one and a white 3/5 our spacecraft, but 2+ to crew on the first portion, and then it's like other creatures you control get +1/+1, and then at 12+ it's a flying lifelink.
I played against it. I didn't play against it, but I played against it several times. Yeah, and I thought it looked pretty good. So I think the question I have is, do you want an anthem in your deck? But if you want an anthem in your deck, I think it's actually a pretty good anthem. And that was maybe my biggest takeaway with spacecraft, is the ones that turn on easily. There's that whole cycle of, like, colored spacecraft that you get to the first node without tapping that much. I think all of those have a lot of constructed potential. Yeah. What did you think of Lumen Class Frigate or whatever it's called?
Yeah, Lumen Class Frigate. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. My Audi and my Innie love a good old
that's what I was thinking the entire time you guys are talking about this card.
I see you, Richard. The gears are turning. Dude, I loved it. I thought it was solid, man. And I think I got to 12+. I thought 12 was kind of crazy of an ask, right? Like, I didn't think it'd be this easy. So I felt like this plus Warmaker Gunship entering and dealing damage equals the artifacts you control to a creature, but having 6+ to get a 4/3 flying, right? Like, for 6+ power crewed into it. Dude, the stationing of all of these were super easy. And then I also felt like the planets were very easy, especially the mono black one, because I don't ever really have haste. And, like, the sacrifice deck just has some good bodies. Like, just playing Sephiroth, that's already 3, right? Like, that's 3 added into that on the turn it comes down. People forget that Bloodghast exists. So, like, I was able to just crew again, right? Like, there was many ways to get every one of these spacecrafts and, like, station them enough to the where they were online very easily. Which ones are good? So far, Warmaker Gunship seems really good. All the colored ones seem really good. And then I think all the planets outside of the red and green. I think the green one right now, I just haven't found a reason. Yeah. Or a really just a deck that wants
a home for it, yeah.
Yeah, maybe this is something down the line, but, like, I can say that at least, you know, all the other ones, like the white one was solid. The blue one, the black one. The blue one was great because I think I played against CGB, and CGB was cooking with a list that, you know, like, I think he fine-tuned it where I was thinking about it with the Quantum Riddlers. Like, a lot of the blue-white warp effects. Yeah. And it's not blue-white control. It's, like, just blue-white, you know, mid-range almost. And, yeah, like, it got all of those cards online super easily. So, very, very fun. Very fun format. Although the amount of times in early access event where I'd play something and just completely pass forgetting to station is like, oh my god. Like,
I did that a couple times too. It's gonna take a couple. Bear, it's okay, bud. It's okay. It's gonna take a couple of games, I think, to remember the stationing, because it's just not something you're used to doing, like tapping your creatures at sorcery speed. But I think it's gonna play well once everyone gets used to it, and I think that's actually gonna do really well. I'm still very excited for Constructed with the set, but we better move on because we got a lot of topics today. I want to mention this. This just came up today. I'm curious what you guys think of this. So they announced new secret lair drops, and normally we don't really get into secret lair drops because there's so many of them, but these ones are unique enough that I wanted your take on them. So these are new Chaos Vault secret lair drops, and the idea of these secret lair drops is you order one, and you get an Edge of Eternity's Commander precon deck, and you also get 5 cards with secret lair art that are supposed to be essentially upgrades to that deck. So you get these 5 fancy cards, so you can get the commander precon, toss these cards in as upgrades. They're going for $105 is the $75 is a non-foil price. $105 is the foil price. I'm curious what you guys think of these drops. So on one hand, it's a secret lair plus commander deck. My one concern I had was, is this just like another thing they're taking away from local game stores? Like, what do you buy from a local game store now? Like, if you get your commander precon and all your upgrades directly from Wizards through Secret Lair, what's left for the local game store? But the idea is kind of neat. I like the idea of tying the Secret Lair into a commander precon, which is super popular. But what do you think of this style of lair drop?
I mean, do you want the Galaxy foil? Like, that's just really what it is. Because, like, you could still buy this and just go out and get everything for like
cheaper than you would through the
$10
secret layer,
total, right? Like, so this is one of those things where the beauty of secret layer, I guess, or you know, maybe not, what may be why reasons why people may not like it is that some of these are not exactly the biggest ticket reprints. And yep. When you buy this, if you're like me and you appreciate the art and you just want the foiling, then like that's dope, right? Like get that. But if you don't really care about it and you actually want to just get in the game and you just want to upgrade it, you could do it for much cheaper and you could just go to your LGS and get that.
This is so bad, guys. Is Costco not enough? It's just a tax on secret lair buyers to buy a commander deck for no reason now, right? Like, you're like, oh, I want these 5 cards. Oh, now I gotta buy this random commander deck for no reason. I
you
thought
can
Costco
get it without
was
the
our
commander
outlet
deck.
To get rid of all these commander decks. Like, what is going on? Did Costco and Lotsy have a fallout? Like, what, like,
wait.
This is just a price increase for no reason. Like, I don't like this at all.
You can get it without the deck, though.
Oh, like you get it just, without the deck?
Just the secret layer. Yeah, you can get just the secret
layer. Why is it even, like, what? Why is the commander deck even here in this bundle then? What's the point of that?
Want them all in one? Yeah, you can get them separately. So, like, if you wanted just the death burger.
So you can get the 5 special cards without the commander precon.
For like,
but if you want it, Wizards will throw you one.
Yeah, basically. And it is worth mentioning, if you do get the solo lair drops, the foils are way more expensive. The foils are 60 this time, when normally they're 40. So if you do buy them without the commander precon and you want the foil edition, you got to pay up. You got to pay up $20 more than traditional foil lair drops.
This is just the moving bulk. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's like,
you know when they like increase the price of Magicon tickets and then they just give you like bulk packs and like, oh, don't worry, guys, it's worth it.
It makes up,
you know,
it, yeah.
like
it's worth saying this is Chaos Vault, right? So they're not necessarily going to do this every set moving forward. That's where they try new things. So we'll have to wait and see if this catches on. But yeah, I personally, I don't think I would buy these. I would rather get something from the LGS, and the foils are, the Galaxy foil is the one cool part of it, and they're just so expensive. I think the price increase makes it kind of tough.
I mean, if you're going to do this, then do it for Final Fantasy, cowards. Yeah, people still try to get that Limit Break deck, Cloud deck, right? Even though I saw places like putting them on discount, like they're printing them like en masse, right? But why not just chuck it up as a secret lair? Interesting.
Speaking of Final Fantasy and financial stuff, we had a Hasbro's Q2 earnings this week. And then I promise after this, we're going to use Spider-Man. But we had Hasbro's Q2 earnings this week, and The numbers were absolutely staggering. So Magic up 16% year over year. Awesome. Hasbro lost almost $1 billion, which is a little rough. They said it had to do with tariffs and paying severance and goodwill impairments, whatever that means in business speak. But they didn't have a good quarter overall. The shocking part, though, is the Final Fantasy news. So Lord of the Rings was the best-selling Magic set of all time. They did $200 million of revenue in 6 months with Lord of the Rings. Final Fantasy did $200 million in revenue in 1 day. So remember when they said months ago it's the best-selling set of all time on day one? They were not lying. That is, like, these are mind-blowing numbers. Like, it was only a couple years ago that they were celebrating Magic and Wizards becoming a billion-dollar brand for the year. And now we have Final Fantasy doing $200 million, 20% of that, in a single day. What do you make of this? Like, it's game over, right? Like, I think the first thing I thought of when I saw this is all the people that complain about Universes Beyond, you might as well give it up, because there is nothing that you are going to be able to say. There is no argument you are going to make that is going to overcome those numbers. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's going to keep happening at this point.
Oh, dude. I can't believe they did that all in a day. And the worst part here is I really hope that they don't expect the same, and that they don't keep trying to you know, do that every time with every new IP. They only want 200 million in day one or bust, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that's realistic to do that with every set.
They did it. So when Lord of the Rings happened, we're like, wow, that was great. Are we going to expect everything to be Lord of the Rings? And then Final Fantasy comes and just smashes it, you know, out of the water. So they will expect more. There's some interesting quotes. I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, we view Japan as a gold mine of collaborations, right? And then I'm like, get your weeb wallets ready, yeah, right? Like, you know what they mean when they say something like that, right? So,
Richard,
I think...
What are you thinking? Yeah, the same thing?
I don't
thing
know. Final Fantasy, I think, is not even that big. I know everyone's like, what can top Final Fantasy? But if you like to rank stuff, like, Final Fantasy does not go into the top list of collabs or crossovers before they actually did Final Fantasy, right? So I think they have a lot of sway. And I think Hasbro, like, the name Hasbro, even though they lost $1 billion, has, like, a lot of sway in getting them the IP rights to things, right? Like, I really believe if it was Wizards of the Coast trying to collab with Marvel, nothing would have happened, right? But Hasbro, you know, collabing with Marvel, I think, made it happen. So I think with these numbers and with the Hasbro brand, like, they're going to keep going forward. It's just what will top Final Fantasy and how fast. But we're reaching, like, gacha numbers, like mobile gaming numbers, right? Like, hundreds of millions in weeks or days. And apparently there's a lot of free money in the world to go pick up. So Wizards is going to keep picking them up, I think. I think this is a good sign for Magic players. And I think most people like Final Fantasy, right? The complaints are around, like, the pricing or the lack of availability. But even Universes Beyond haters, like, kind of seem to, you know, not hate it as much. The limited format was great. I think maybe Standard could use some improvement, but I mean, most people just putting them in their binders anyway, so I don't know.
The limited format may be one of the best too. It's not even just a great, it's like, it is up there. I really like playing this limited, or at least Final Fantasy.
I think it is the best. I mean, the flavor puts it over the top. I think mechanically you can put it up there as one of the top formats of all time, but I think the flavor just puts it, just strongly cements it there for me.
Dude,
which, interestingly, Spider-Man is going to do the exact opposite, because they butchered the set and they're doing a new pick two draft format.
I think they created this draft format because of Spider-Man. It's the more I hear about it, the more it seems like they create, because from what I can tell, piecing this together, it seems like Spider-Man was supposed to be a mini set, right? Like Assassin's Creed. But then they decide they need to move into Standard because everyone hates mini sets. So they try to add more cards to it, but it's still small. So someone actually asked Miro this week, how are we going to draft? And he said, well, there's only 5 draft archetypes and it's going to be a little bit more redundant. But don't worry, we really focused on the new draft where you get 2-pick draft now. So that's really the focus of the set, is the 2-pick drafting. So I almost think they created 2-pick drafting to try to make Spider-Man Limited work. It'll be interesting to see if it actually does and if it catches on. I'm a little concerned about Spider-Man, honestly. Like, we know that good Universes Beyond sets are the best-selling things they make in all of Magic. We saw with Lord of the Rings. We saw with Final Fantasy. It's going to be interesting to see what a bad Universes Beyond set looks like. Because, you know, they made Aether Drift. They make bad Is Magic in-universe sets, you know. Well,
I mean, Doctor
we haven't
Who.
Had one that was, like, not Commander precons, right? We haven't had, like, a standard legal full premiere set of a flop yet. So it's going to be interesting to see once that inevitably happens. Do you think Spider-Man is the one? Like, what are the expectations for Spider-Man now that we've seen initial spoilers? Because I've done a couple of spoiler videos, and the response feels different to me. And I know it's just a little sliver of the Magic universe, right? It's the people watching our spoiler videos. But Final Fantasy, I came away just feeling like the community universally kind of beloved Final Fantasy for whatever reason. Just like, I did not hear a lot of complaints. The complaints were stuff like, you like, the flavor could have been better, or this character's missing, which you're just always going to have the Universes Beyond sets. But with the Spider-Man early spoilers, so far I've seen a lot of people that give me the impression they really do not like Spider-Man, which kind of caught me by surprise how many people seem to just, like, adamantly kind of hate Spider-Man. But what do you think about Spider-Man?
I didn't know. Do you hang out with a guy named J. Jonah Jameson? Because it seems like you just hang out with a bunch of parody accounts. Because he's a menace. I hate Spider-Man. But I genuinely think that, you know what, like, every one of these sets, I think, are a flop in comparison to Final Fantasy, which is funny because I think when Final Fantasy was announced, I was like, I like this, the franchise, but I didn't think it was 200 million in a day, right? Like, yeah. So I'm kind of shocked, and I'm going to be completely honest. I will say that Spider-Man will do better than what you think the vocal minority is doing, just because it is still Spider-Man. The people that are about Spider-Man aren't in the Magic spaces yet. They're not the ones commenting. I don't think that it'll be Final Fantasy. And I think that Avatar is another one that is being underrated. And I think this is another one that'll also do better than we are giving it credit for. But yeah, like I think Spider-Man so far, it's at the pre-release, I think the one thing I did hear, and like maybe it's because the people I was talking to and whatnot, right? It was just the consensus was like, yo, I kind of forgot how much I knew about Spider-Man, and I wasn't high, like I didn't care about it. And some of the people were just like, you know, I'm kind of coming around on it because I just forgot how much I liked about Spider-Man.
What do you think, Richard?
So the community is overly negative on Spider-Man. Like I hang out in the limited communities too, or I hide in the shadows, and people are like, "Wow, this pick two draft, like absolute garbage, right?" And it's a 200 card set. However, I will say that before they spoiled any Spider-Man cards, I was very skeptical of Spider-Man. I was like, you know, whatever. Like I actually, Spider-Man's my second most read comic book franchise after X-Men. So I actually like Spider-Man, but I didn't care much for the set. After they revealed the cards, I'm all in. I think the cards actually look sweeter than Final Fantasy. I know, blasphemy, ooh, right? But they actually have unique frames and card styles that are actually unique to like the comic book world and give you like this vibe, whereas Final Fantasy didn't have that, right? Final Fantasy was just on the backs of the beloved characters. So collecting wise, I think Spider-Man's a banger. I'm going to collect the cards.
Ooh.
The play, like nothing can beat Limited. I don't think anything can beat Final Fantasy Limited, especially this scuffed pick two drafting.
Yeah.
Especially that we're getting not Spider-Man on Arena. Like, what are we even going to be playing? I don't even know.
That's so whack.
Yeah.
Right? But like the cards look so much better. So I actually think collectors will come in. You know, the Pokemon bros will come in and scoop everything up. Everything's going to be super expensive. And we haven't mentioned it, but sagas are comic book framed, right? Comic strips. Oh. And then there's a new format. I don't know, like the Doc Ock alternate art where they're using like the comic book font, yep, right? The cards are all comic book style, obviously. They have original artist covers. So some of the cards are actually like the covers and it's original art. So all of these make for insane collectibles. So I actually think Magic players are going to be left out. Like the sports card bros and the Pokemon bros are going to come in. People will just buy a Spider-Man to put on their mantle and call it a day. And small set, unimpactful and standard won't matter because Final Fantasy had literal like zero impact and people still bought it out. Having said that, the cards in Spider-Man look incredibly pushed, right? There are a lot of like 2, 3, 4 mana yep. spells that are designed for standard. So I actually think Spider-Man will make a significant impact in standard, but the card styles go so hard. Like I fail to see how this will fail. Great use of words there.
Fail to see how this...
Dude, how crazy is it to see like, you know, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko credited on the artist section of a Magic card, right? For example, for those that don't know, Peter Parker and, you know, whatever, I think it's the Amazing Spider-Man that they gave the yes. cover to, which makes cover. Sense because Amazing Spider-Man 1, it's the original cover, it's on the card. And I don't know, there's something surreal about it, just seeing these artists that I've just like... I straight up go to the Jack Kirby art exhibit, right, where the museum that pops up whenever it shows up in L.A., and I think that's such a cool thing. And to see it now on a Magic card, to see some of the popular moments, like, I'm not even the biggest Spider-Man fan. That's so funny to me. I don't even like Spider-Man. I like his villains. I like the world around him. And I'm just like, yo, this is surreal to see. I don't know. I think the comic book covers kind of go hard, right? And then you have like Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, the cover, like for Ultimate Spider-Man 1. Like, dude, this is looking good. And also, I never thought I needed Jesper Espeling to like make a Venom artwork, but my God, having now seen it, it is God tier. It is so beautiful. And yeah, like the whole world and like, I don't know, I am here for it. I just love these cards. I love seeing Bill Sienkiewicz, who, I didn't know this, he already did Magic art. Did you know that he did it for Fallen Empires? Wow. But, I mean, you know, like, but, yeah, yeah, everybody.
You for not remembering my Fallen Empires art.
You don't remember Fallen Empires? But he's done so much iconic comic work, and then now he's already been in Magic, and then to see, like, you know, like, seeing Tyler Walpole do more stuff as well in the Spider-Man set, like, there's... This is kind of just hitting everything for me, and like it's given me a ear-to-ear smile. Like, this is just exactly what I could ask for from a Marvel set.
So I'm curious. Personally, flavor-wise, I'm pretty mad this set. I do like, I don't even really care about comics, but some of the like the retro looking, like the Peter Parker Amazing Spider-Man with like the retro comic art, that actually looks pretty cool. Some of the special treatments do look pretty sweet. I'm curious, we talked about this before. Do you think these treatments are good enough to like carry with the collectors? Because I know that's something we talked about a few weeks ago. Like, if they have banger comic book special treatments, that's gonna really help push the set. Does this hit the mark enough to like to sell the set? Is this what you guys were envisioning in your heads basically as comic book fans?
Oh yeah, they actually went above and beyond. They hit the double. Yes. Right, they're like, hold on, we could want to see me throw another banger. The sagas being in the comic strip panel is brilliant. I think that is a brilliant hit. And then just seeing the iconic covers across like a certain, like, you know, Spider-Man's world, that's like the manga arts in One Piece, right? Like obviously the manga arts are a bunch of images stitched together, but like the main thing is it's a manga art, and that hits the soul of any manga lover, right? So this is just everything about the comic book lover in me enjoys this top down right now. This is a beautiful masterpiece. And you know what? I know Mauro loves like Spider-Man. And Mauro loves, like, you know what I mean? Like, these are things that are just like, you could tell that love was put into the set.
I would have expected one of these treatments in the set. So if you're like, oh, they do comic book panning, I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But to have all three of them and also in the set, so yeah, some of them will be probably locked to collector boosters, but you would have expected some of these to be secret lairs. Yeah. So I think there's no way this fails. Like, I can't see how this fails. Like, I don't know. Like, it fails in, like, they overprinted or something, right? Like, they get the demand wrong. But I want all these cards. And I don't see how you'd be a fan of Spider-Man and be like, nah, these look ugly. I don't want them. You know, like, I don't see that happening. And there must be enough fans of Spider-Man. So, but I read the online forums, and people seem very disgruntled. But that's never stopped a Magic player from forking money over. So
it's true.
Even though they don't like it, they're still going to buy the cards. So I don't know,
hate
right?
Buy but so much.
I'm curious, Seth. You as a bystander Does Final Fantasy look better or does Spider-Man look better? You have no real affiliation with any of these franchises, right?
Yeah. No, no, not really. I have about the same amount of, like, watched half a movie of each, I think. So, I like
How did you miss the entire MCU, but okay.
Intentionally. Intentionally.
Advent Children is not. Please, God, no.
So, I will say, I think Final Fantasy fits more of the, like, traditional magic vibe than Spider-Man does. So I think that's where I would put Final Fantasy ahead. The Spider-Man set just has a lot of, like, modern-looking cards, right? You have a lot of, like, people on skateboards and people eating hot dogs, people on their cell phones, just kind of, like, living life in 2020s. Like, Final Fantasy didn't have nearly as much of that. And that's one of the things that gets me the most is, like, I just like it to not look like the real world. And I think the Spider-Man set, some of them are really, like, cool, like the anti-Venom, some of the Spider-Men themselves. Like, some of those I think are really sweet looking, even like Flying Octobot and some of the weird villain stuff is really cool. But then some of it, like Miles Morales and Gwen Stacy and some of those, I'm like, oh, that's another card for the guy eating a sandwich in his garage deck I'm putting together. It just, like, doesn't do it for me. That's just like someone on their cell phone going to college.
What guy eating his sandwich is swinging from a building. Hold on.
The one that really gets me though is Spider-Ham Peter Porker. to me, this card is just too far. My understanding of this card is it's essentially an unset card in the Spider-Man universe, but now it's a black border in standard, not unset card in Magic. And if they printed it as like a Secret Lair silver border card, I'd be like, whatever. But everything about this card, the art and like, it's just, it's too goofy.
Tell me how Chatterfang is some kind of serious Magic the Gathering card where you make squirrels and you sacrifice squirrels, but Peter Porker Spider-Ham has gone too far.
It's just like that name, Peter Porker Spider-Ham.
Yeah, the name! That's so sick. That's so sick.
You're having a good chuckle, Seth. Is it not?
Eating a hot dog and getting yelled at by like a donkey, I guess, in New York City, I assume. But none of that, I guess, matters. The card itself, 2 mana 2/2. When it enters, you make a food token, and then other spiders, boars, bats, birds, bears, cats, dogs, frogs, jackals, lizards, mice, otters, rabbit, raccoons, rats, squirrels, turtles, and wolves you control get +1/+1. We were just talking about how no one knows how to play Magic anymore and how you can't keep up and you can't build a limited deck because there's too much going on. How do you play this in limited, Richard? Like, your opponent plays this. Every creature they play, you're going to have to, like, read the list of creature types to see if it's getting a relatively meaningless +1/+1 buff, right? Does this not just slow the game to an absolute crawl to try to play this?
It does, but it's easy to. Oh, so you need to know that it's a Lord, and every time you do math, you check the types, okay? But I think that's easier to understand than, like, oh, this Planeswalker had a static. Did you remember to check the static? Or, like, there's a whole backside of this card that you need to flip around and read. But if you do that, your opponent will know what card is in your hand, so you can't. So you're just going to pretend you know what the card does the whole game, you know? Like, this is not easy to play with, but I don't think it's like one of the worst things, right? You just need to know it's a Lord. You got to double check. I will say, didn't Bloomborough have cards that reference like 3 or 4 types or something?
Yeah.
So this is just power creep.
15 or 16, yeah.
Okay, so the question is, are there animal types that Peter Porker does not cover that will get you, right? Because in general, you're like, these are all the animal types, right? So if you have an animal type, you got to double check with them.
That's not even all the animal types legal and standard, though. Like, it's not anywhere near actually the full list. And that's my biggest gripe with it, honestly. Like, I can deal with a lot of silliness. I always come back to the same thing, right? As long as the game is good, I can put up with a lot of IP silliness. I can even put up with Spider-Ham Peter Porker, even though for me that's pretty across the line as far as silliness. If the game is good, and I feel like this is a design that just makes gameplay worse. If you just say non-human creatures or something, maybe you don't get as much of a chuckle out of it, and maybe the chuckle
you can't.
Why not?
Because then you would buff the robots.
So?
And Peter Porker.
I care about gameplay. I care about not
creatures
to play a game of Magic. I just want to play the game.
Spider-Ham.
This is unplayable anyway. It doesn't
buff the robots.
But I feel, I guess when it comes down to it, I feel like it makes gameplay somewhat worse for a meme. And that's the part I don't like about it. I feel like the joke, haha, we made this funny joke. But I feel like it makes gameplay actively worse. And I don't like that trade-off. But anyway.
How do you feel about the new MDFC / DFC cards if you think this one makes it worse?
Yeah. Well, I think those cards are actually, I mean, those are some of the coolest cards in the set. Those are, they're two cards in one. They're so good, right? Like, they have to be so good. Why don't you give us one, Richard, so listeners know what we're talking about.
All right. They're complicated. We'll just go with, so not Peter Porker, but Peter Parker, okay? So Peter Parker, a 1 and a white, is a 0/1. When Peter Parker enters, create a 2/1 green spider creature token with reach. For Bant, you can transform Peter Parker only as a sorcery. So the backside, it's Amazing Spider-Man 4/4 Vigilance Reach. Each legendary spell you cast that's one or more colors has web slinging the Bant colors. So green, white, blue. Web slinging is, you can cast a spell for its web slinging cost if you also return a tapped creature you control to its owner's hand. And also, the backside has a mana cost, which makes it an MDFC, which means you can cast it directly onto the backside, and it's 4 mana, Bant. So, yeah, so 4 mana Spider-Man can also be cast for 2 mana to make a token that can also be transformed later into the Spider-Man you wanted to cast. And then it gives all your spells web slinging, which is like weird ninjutsu. It's like you return a tapped creature. It's at sorcery speed, I believe. So you can't do it like in the middle of combat. But yeah, card advantage.
Bouncing,
card advantage here, right?
Bouncing back a tapped creature is kind of crazy, right? Like that's like really good. We just talked about stationing, by the way.
Yeah. Vehicle stationing, all that stuff.
Dude,
it's like, and this is also the card with the original comic book art, the special version as well.
Yeah, this is like Amazing Spider-Man 1, and like, oh, dude, it looks so good. But yeah, like the Peter Parker side too. Do not sleep on that. That is a 2 mana. You get a 2/1 and a 0/1.
It's a 2/1, and you get to. It's kind of like adventure or something. Like you can get the 2 mana 2/1, and then later cast it for 4 to get the big one. It's a built-in 2/1, if not more, because web slinging lets you replay your ETBs or whatever. This card's insane, which is why I don't like almost all the cards in the set are like 2 or 3 mana, and like made for standard. Like there's not a lot of cards that look like they're made for commander. So I'm kind of excited. Like, I think Peter Parker and company will have a lot more impact in Final Fantasy in standard. Like, it looks like they designed it specifically for standard, whereas Final Fantasy looks like they designed it for commander, really.
I think that's
don't worry, though, really if push. You were worried about it being played, I know there's Amazing Spider-Man, but don't forget about Spectacular Spider-Man. Because Spectacular Spider-Man, that one is so good. Right? That's literal heroic intervention on a body. 1 and a white, flash 3/2, pay 1. It gains flying or pay 1, sack it. Creatures you control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. This card is so good.
That's one of the better ones. It is one of the better ones for sure. I mean, 3/2 flash is already good stats. And then you get the heroic intervention ability. I think it's definitely really good in commander. In standard, I think it's probably playable too. One of the downsides is it is legendary, right? And
sure.
One of the things about these double face cards is they kind of naturally get around the legend rule. Because if you had a Peter Parker, you can play Amazing Spider-Man. If you got Amazing Spider-Man, you play Peter Parker. So those ones really get around the legend rule. I think in any sort of like creature beatdown deck, though, like a 3/2 flash for 2 that also can heroic intervention for 1 mana seems kind of insane. Elko also can give itself flying, right? If you pay a mana, you get flying too, so I can even chip in for damage. Probably a commander staple, right? I feel like this is, it's not T Pro, but it's probably still going to make the cut in a lot of my white decks as like white heroic intervention. Plus, you get a body, so you can put equipment on it. You can attack with it. You can trigger your creature matter stuff. No, I see Richard shaking his head. You think this card sucks?
In commander? No, right? You're going to play T Pro. You're going to play Flawless Maneuver. You're going to play Flare Fortitude. And what? You're going to put like 8 of these in your, it's maxed out, right? Like free is better than 2. Okay? And then T Pro is like too much.
It flipped your dowsing dagger, Richard. How many of those flip your dowsing dagger? How many of those flip your dowsing dagger?
I don't think it's like an auto include because like the competition is better, right? So like maybe if you have some extra synergies or something, you'll put this in over one of them. But I think in a vacuum, those other 3 are better. And like, how many of these effects are you actually going to run, right? Like, yeah. Flare and Teferi's Protection go in number one and number two, right? And then I don't even play Flawless half the time, right? And this would go in that slot. So I think you cap out at one or two. So even though it looks amazing.
Spectacular.
Spectacular. the competition is too high, right? Like, you don't just put in, like, eight protection. I mean, maybe you do, right? Maybe you're playing a Voltron deck where you need eight protection spells that comes in. But in a normal deck, you don't need that many. So it doesn't make the cut.
Does it change that it's on a body?
Yeah. That's right. My theory, is being on a body is enough of an upside. Like, I still think T-Pro Clever Concealment are, like, one and two,
and this is behind it.
So I would rank this in, like, the next tier, but I think having a body in the context of just what white likes to do most of the time in Commander is going to be really powerful.
And, there's one thing those two cards do that, like, okay, so the one thing this does that those cards mentioned don't do is that this would probably make the Redditors more angry if you play it against them. And I think that gives me emotional value.
It's going to be extra memes if I flash this in. I protect my poor. That is a pretty good Spider-Man. Those are both good Spider-Man, but I think you guys are overlooking the best Spider-Man. And the card that I actually just, like,
Spider-Ham.
This is, for me, the jaw-dropping card. No, it's not Spider-Ham, but it is another two-drop. It's Spider-Punk. Spider-Punk is a card that when I read this card, I was like, oh my god. It's a 2-mana 2/1 in red. It is Riot, so it can be a 3/2, or it can enter with haste. You get to choose when you play it. And then it says other spiders you control have Riot. Forget about that unless you're like a Spider-Man tribal deck or something, but that text isn't really relevant. Spells and abilities can't be countered. Damage can't be prevented. Is this not just an absurd power creep card? To me, when I read this, I'm like, oh my god, this card is... it's incredible. Like, a 3/2 for two is already good, or you can haste it in with two power if you have a good attack. And then preventing all your stuff from being countered, not only does this let you fight through counter spells, it lets you get around ward, it goes through Tishana's Tidebinder and weird effects like that, and it gets through the One Ring and fogs and glacial chasms, anything that prevents damage. This card's so wild to me. Am I wrong? Is this card not busted?
I think this card is, like, good. It's fine. Like, I like it, but it's... Okay, you know that green drop we just had in Edge of Eternity?
Yeah.
Kind of has also a wall of text, right?
Seth loved that one, too.
Yeah, like that
this
yo,
one's
normally
better.
Okay, this one benefits because it's in red, right? It is in red, so that is the main thing, whereas mono green is struggling. I am curious to see how this actually plays, because right now, this just looks like a 2-drop. Right, it's just like a 2-drop. All of this is like vanilla to me, right? Because I'm going to die into it anyways, no matter what.
I should say, I'm more excited about this outside of Standard, honestly, because its abilities in Standard don't do a ton right now, because it's not like we have a fog in Standard. There's not even a ton of counter spells in Standard. But if you go back to Commander, there's no red Grand Abolisher effect. This is the first can't be countered effect in red. So if you're playing like some sort of red combo deck and you got to force through your combo, this is going to be the go-to. Plus, once you get back to Modern, you got the One Ring, you have, you know, all the fog effects in Commander and Glacial Chasms. So I'm more hyped from it for like Modern back through Commander, honestly, than Standard. And Standard, I think, is still fine, but I think it lines up really well with older formats and like high-powered Commander decks.
I have a question though about this, because like, I mean, you're right. I do think that is obviously way better in like the older formats because it's also cheap. But I don't know. I look at this card and like, I'm curious why they threw abilities on there, and I'm curious if that's gonna matter. Abilities can't be countered, right? So I know Tidebinder is here. Like that is something that could counter an ability. But that has to be on there for a reason, right? Like, if I'm thinking in a standard...
Don't they always make some spell to counter abilities just usually unplayable? No?
I don't know. That's a pretty unique effect, I think. At least on a creature. I couldn't find another creature that does that. Do you think it could just be Ward Grim? Is this supposed to be safety valve for Vel'Gavoth or whatever? Like, some of the brutal Ward cards that we have in Standard? Because abilities can't be countered, you don't have to pay the Ward cost. So you can kill... Ward creatures? Or do you think it's got to be more than that?
It's got to be more than that, right? Because I think spells can't be countered means that protects you from ward. But I'm talking about the abilities can't be
countered. So it's like you have a
It's like stifle proof
effect or something, yeah, right? Like that would be an ability so you can get the Valgavot. That is probably it, rather than stifle. I don't think they would make stifle. Even if they did, stifle would suck so hard you wouldn't care to
no one would care,
have
yet.
The ability not be capped. You know, like, so I'm pretty sure it's just creature abilities, like something you tap does 4 damage, now it gets through ward or something, right? Like stuff like that is probably what they designed it for. But
okay,
in constructed, like unless you're playing spiders, like I think this card's kind of useless. I like it in commander for the anti-fog deck and the spells can't be countered.
Yeah,
you kind of have that in you have like defense grid, you have the equipment that you can equip and stuff like that. But this is cleaner. But I don't expect it to see play in standard as a 2-mana 2/1 haster, you know, like unless there's a full on spider deck. Like if all the rest of your cards are spiders, giving everything Riot is insane.
Exactly,
so if there's a full on spider deck, which is possible
because of Spider-Man, yeah.
But also, the transform cards come down as not spiders, so I don't know, right?
Although if you cast the backside, then they are spiders. So you can cast the backside and still get Riot out of them. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Seeing all these Spider-Man, I almost think that there could be like a Spider-Man deck in standard. We'll have to see what the rest of the set looks like, but there are a lot of Spider-Man. I think there's 9 that they revealed
so far in
the set. I hope Peter Parker
is tier 1 for you, Seth.
please, no. Okay, speaking of tier 1, I got to ask you about one more card before we wrap things up. And this one doesn't even really have Spider-Man flavor. They made this card, I think, intentionally without Spider-Man flavor so they could reprint it in the future. But I'm curious how good you guys think Multiversal Passage is. So this is a new rare land. When it enters, you choose a basic land type. You can pay 2 if you don't enter stabbed, and the land is the type. So essentially, it's an island, a forest, a swamp, a plains, whatever you need it to be. It works like a shock land. You have it come into play untapped. I know we had one in Dominaria United that was like a really bad version of this, that was like a pain land version. I can't remember the name of it because no one played it because it was so bad. Is this card good, Krim? Like, is this a meaningful piece of standard mana bases once Spider-Man drops? Or is it going to be like the Dominaria United one, whose name I can't even remember? It was so bad and no one plays it.
Well, that one was terrible because it was also somehow a fast land on top of that.
Yeah, it had like a bunch of restrictions on it, yeah.
This removing the tapped clause and turning it and adding the land type is pretty big, right? Because when Tarkir was coming out, the biggest concern was like, how aggro can we get in multicolor, right? Does aggro
stay? This is starting town. You can have a lot of untapped mana on turn 1 in whatever color you want.
Yeah, I kind of love that. So I think this is very good. I think this land is like an amazing one. It's not one that like kind of jumps off the page, but when you play this card, I think it'll be way better than whatever that terrible one was from Dominaria United. It kind of helps with the terrible, like, you know, if you wanted to go Mardu aggro, I think you're definitely playing 4 of these for starting towns like you had mentioned, and you have shocks. So I think the mana bases are definitely getting better, a lot better. And this is going to be a big part of it if you want to go multicolor. It's even got multiversal because multicolor, all of that. Look at that.
You're
great.
Giving a little push in the multi direction. Yeah.
So,
I mean, it also turns on verges, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I think it's very good. I think it's very good, although I think it's going to depend a little bit on your colors, how much you need this card. I've been building a lot of standard decks lately, and you run into the colors that don't have the fetch and you don't have, or don't have the shock and don't have a fast land. And you're like, oh my God, how do I even build this mana base? In colors like that, I think this card's going to be absurd. And in like 4 or 5 color, if you want to go full on, you know, 3 to 5 color pile of cards, I think it's going to be really good. If you have a fast land and a shock land, then this might not make the cut in all those color combinations. But I do think this is a meaningful standard card. But what do you think, Richard? Is this good?
Probably fine. Like it'll see play. I don't know if you played a 5 color pile though, because you choose a type and it only adds that color.
It is not
forever.
A dual land, right?
Right. It's not a dual land. It doesn't switch the colors it can make. I feel this is more for optimizing 2-mana color bases because it turns on your verges, it gives you your colors, and your color requirements aren't intensive. Because we still have starting town. Starting town is just a straight
starting
up
town is any, better, yeah.
Any color land. So I think you'll see play in like 2-color decks. I think once you get to the higher number, it'd be starting town or something else, like actual dual lands. And it also matters like how pip intensive we are. Like all the Spider-Man cards are like 3-color wedges, whatever they are, like Bant, Jeskai, whatever, Bant, right? So you, like Bant the color requirements matter,
queen.
Right? So having dual lands is kind of where you want to be versus like multiversal passage. So it's going to depend on how color intensive, or if we're trying to do triple black with that charm thing we were talking about, right? So yeah, it's going to depend on what decks are being played. But this will see play somewhere, I think.
I'm glad
Because you brought that up, Richard, does this mean that Bant is Queens? And then since Miles is from Brooklyn, is Brooklyn Naya?
Wow. We have some in-depth Spider-Man
from
lore.
New York chime in about this one.
Anyway, I think that's all we got time for today. So if you're from New York, I guess let us know the answer to Krim's Spider-Man lore question in the comments. No fish mail this week, but we'll get to some in the future once you all send some more in. Richard, how do people send in fish mail questions?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag #EnergyFishMail, and we'll get to our questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 546 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.